I do love my church. I do. I love my church. And all of those statements were from people here in our church. That wasn't just something we threw up there. We kind of threw that out on Facebook this week, and some of you responded, and some of that is your responses. In fact, all of that is your responses. I love my church. Last week, I had the opportunity, by the way, thank you, Lee, and I know Lee did a great job Sunday, you know, it's nice, it really is. It's nice when God calls us to do things, or maybe even God calls us to take a break. By the way, taking breaks is not unbiblical. You got to refresh, and everyone does, even pastors. But last week wasn't one of those necessarily physically refreshing things. It was tough, you know, preaching revivals and going and doing extended services. I was wiped out, but it was great. It really was. And God sent me to a place to really challenge a church, and it felt like we did that. And it was good, but you know what? And this isn't anything against that church. And guys, if any of you are watching, no offense, but I love my church. I love my church. And you know what? You should love your church. If this is where God has placed you, now some of you may be here for the first time or just a few times, and you're trying to figure out if you love this church or not. That's cool. But once you find yourself placed in a place where God has set you and he has spoke to you in such a way, then listen, you should love your church. I mean, really, church should not be some place that you dread going to. Church should not be some place that is just this non-excited, non-relevant, non-life-changing place. It's not supposed to be. But you know what? I love my church. I love my church. And this morning, you know, I just kind of want to talk about that for just a little bit, you know, because I don't believe Jesus died for just anything. I mean, he died for you and me, and he died for, I believe this, for his message to be put out and sent out from the local church. And so, you know, now I love a lot of things in my life. I do. I said I love my church. I love Jesus more than anything. But I love my wife. I just love her to death. She's awesome. Love my family. You know, I love golf. Many of you know that. And no, I'm not crazy. I really do. I love it. And, you know, it's great. I love to hunt and fish. You know, around here, it's just another natural thing, hunting and fishing. I love football. Amen. And it's almost time. Amen. I do. I love football. I mean, I love all sports. If there's a ball involved, I enjoy it. But football has always been that sport that's just, I don't know, I love it. Wished it was a year-round thing. I love it. You know what? And all of these things, and some of you, you know, you would say, well, I love shopping. You know? Oh, golly. You know? Yeah. Some of you say, I love the lake. You know, and spending time there and relaxing. You know, all that's really cool and all that's really great. You know, but here's the thing. If you go and tell people that you love hunting and fishing or you love football or you love your family, and you know, nobody really thinks a whole lot about that. In fact, that's pretty cool. For most people, they accept that. But if you go tell somebody that you love your church, I mean, seriously, you know, and I've done it before, you get those looks like, what? You love church? Yes, I love my church. But still, yeah, it's just something that's accepted and some, you know, to say if we love all this other stuff. But it seems like when we say I love my church, it's just like, oh, man, I just don't know. And, you know, and I want you to know this morning, I don't love my church because it's pretty full. I mean, I love seats being full. By the way, if you look around, there are empty seats. And since there's empty seats, that means there's room for more people. And since there's room for more people, then it's our responsibility to fill them. But I, you know, I don't love our church because of the building. I love the building, but I don't necessarily love it because of the building, you know, or any of that stuff. I love our church because of Jesus and the fact that we get to share his message and see people change right here. And not only inside of these walls, because a lot of times there's another thing, and I preached this before, the church is not this building. The church is the people that's in it. You are the church. I am the church. We make up this. This is just a place that we get to meet. Okay, the church does not stop on Sunday mornings at 11:15 when we walk out. The church should not cease to exist when Sunday morning service is over with. In fact, the church should get stronger, and the church should be more dynamic, and the church should be more powerful once the service is over with. Because the church is not called to just come in. In fact, the church is called to go out. So keep that in mind. You know, just, you know, just one of them things. Like I said, another reason I love my church. You know, I've heard people say, and maybe some of you have said, that I don't need church to be a good Christian. And let me just say that There might be a little bit of honesty to that, and I'm not saying that you can't get, I'll never say, you can get to heaven without going to church. You love Jesus, that's all it takes. But it's just kind of like this, because, you know, well, if you're married, and listen, if you're married, you don't need to go home to stay married. But if you don't go home, your relationship's going to be pretty bad. It's going to get tough. It's kind of the same thing with church. You don't need church to be a Christian, but if you don't go to church, you're going to miss out on a lot of things that can make you stronger, that can help you grow, building relationships with other people. And so, you know, it's just, So for our relationship to grow the way it's supposed to grow, we need the church, and it's just, and it just as well be a church that we love. I mean, really. And there is no perfect church. This church is not perfect. I'm not a perfect pastor. It is full of imperfect people. That is a reality in life. And that's just the way it is. And I don't care what church you go to. I don't care what church you visit or what church is, what every one of them, they're not perfect. And it just because they're full of imperfect people. And so that's just life. And so today we're going to look at a story about Matthew. And I actually preached this story a few weeks ago, completely, totally different way. Isn't that what's cool about the Bible? You know, it's pretty neat, you know, because you take God's word and you can take a scripture or a set of scriptures and you can preach something on it and God might speak something through it. And then a few weeks or a few months or a few years later, God take that same scripture and speak something relevant that's totally different. And that's just, I think that's the life of God's word. And so we're going to look this morning at Matthew. And Matthew was one of the 12 disciples. One of Jesus' 12 disciples. And so this is a story, and this story should really be our story, and also, I believe, the story of our church. And there are three things in this story that can we learn about loving our church and being the church Jesus desires for us to be. And the first thing is this, there's hope for us. There's hope for us, number one. Through Jesus, through his church, there is hope for us. One thing that I know, that every single person, including myself in this building, has been at a place in their life, okay, or will be in a place in their life someday where they feel hopeless, where you feel hopeless. Kind of like this picture, kind of right up here. That's a pretty hopeless situation. I'm serious. Sometimes you just feel like you're stuck up in the air. You've got a job to do and a task to do and a life to live, and you're just stuck, and there's nothing that you can do. You're in this hopeless place with this helpless life and this helpless situation, and it's just tough. And you know, right now, some of you feel that way. Guaranteed that somebody in this church right now, in this building, has this feeling like you're just stuck, hopeless. And honestly, it's a part of life. But it will happen. Maybe it's an addiction. Maybe you feel stuck, and maybe you feel that you're in this hopeless situation because of an addiction. Maybe it's a relationship. Could be your marriage. Could be a marital situation to where you just feel, man, this is a situation, it's just hopeless. Maybe it's in a job, and you know, or you know, something of that nature. You know, anything like this. Maybe it's spiritual. Maybe in your spiritual life right now, you feel like you're in a hopeless place, a hopeless situation. Maybe it's, you know, honestly, just being honest and real, maybe it's sin. Maybe you're just, your life is just gripped by this one specific thing or this two specific things, and you just think it's a hopeless situation that you just can't get out of it. You know, and maybe it's anxiety, maybe it's depression. You know, I've been through both of those, and that, you can feel pretty hopeless when you're stuck in those situations of life. But get this, Jesus knows how to help hopeless people. And sometimes in our hopelessness, we forget that. Jesus is a professional at dealing with people that feel like they're hopeless. This morning, I want to start this story once again in the book of Matthew. It's in chapter 9. And I'm going to start with verse 9, and it says this: as Jesus went on from there, he saw. Now, I want you to, and those two little words are very, very important in this point, and actually with this whole message, Jesus saw. He saw. Wasn't nobody looking for him at this particular point in time. Jesus saw, okay? Jesus saw him. And so, he goes on to say, he saw a man named Matthew sitting at the tax collector's booth. Let's stop right there for just a second. So he saw a man named Matthew sitting at the tax collector's booth, and I want you to grab something. I really studied this tax collector thing this week and looked at this. You know, because today when we think tax collector, we immediately think what? IRS. You know, and that's a bad word. It really is. You know, no one likes to pay taxes, but, you know, it's just something that we have to do. It's part of our life, part of our government. You know, that's just how it is. But it's just when you mention the word IRS, that's what we think of, and it's not a cool thing. It's just really not. But get this. As not cool as it is in our culture today, a tax collector in Jesus' day was the lowest of the low. They were the scum of the earth. They were the outcast. I mean, it was awful. And so they're in this place to where, honestly, they're a very hopeless person in a very helpless situation because of their choice in this lifestyle. Let me ask you this. Have you ever met anyone that when you're around them, they just give you the creeps? Don't point. You're awake. I got you. I mean, seriously, you know, you're around that person, they just give you the creeps, you know, and it's just one of them things, you know, and seriously, that person you're around, and you're like, man, I cannot wait to get away from this person. This was Matthew. This is how people perceived Matthew before he met Jesus, and really any tax collector. You know, it was just, you know, that's how they felt about a tax collector. They had no friends. They didn't have no life. They were hopeless. Being a tax collector also basically meant that he had to turn his back on God. Because of the situation that he was in and the responsibilities that he had, I mean, they did some pretty bad stuff to people. Tax collectors. In fact, there were really two groups of really bad people in Jesus' day, tax collectors and sinners. That, I mean, seriously, if you were a bad person, you falled into one of those two categories, a tax collector or a sinner. So all this, but get this, Jesus saw him. That is so important, and this is so cool. Jesus saw him. He was helpless. He was hopeless. He was in this situation. You know he was hurting. How many people like to live life alone? Very few. Even people that like to be alone still like one or two people that they can live life with. He was in this situation. And you know what? Jesus saw him, and Jesus does this all the time. All the time. And you know, some of you may say, well, if he sees me, then why am I still hurting? If he sees me, why am I still going through pain? You know, sometimes we have to go through hurt, and sometimes we have to go through pain to really get to the place that God wants us to be. And you know what, you know, and actually to grow. And so today, if you're hurting and you're feeling helpless or hopeless, it's an opportunity for Jesus to show up and show out in your life. It is a huge opportunity for him to show up and show out in your life. So if we continue on in this verse, let me finish the verse really quickly. Just to kind of read. As Jesus went on from there, he saw a man named Matthew sitting at the tax collector's booth. Follow me, he told him. And Matthew got up and followed him. So Jesus sees him, the Son of God, the Messiah, the one who was perfect, and he walks up to the most hopeless, helpless person and says, follow me. Can you imagine how uncomfortable everyone else around in that situation just immediately got? I mean, think about that. Can you imagine how uncomfortable that made? In fact, we see later on, and I'll read, how uncomfortable some of them actually did get. And, you know, I could just hear some of the murmurings. I really can, because I think about stuff this, you know, and they'd be like, Jesus, do you know this guy? Really, do you really know who this guy is? Do you know what he does? Do you know his lifestyle? Do you know what he does to people? Do you know his attitude? Listen, it's just not right. You can't be talking to him. You can't be dealing with him. You should tell him to stop collecting taxes first and change his attitude, and then he can hang out with you and us. I mean, I can hear that coming from some people. But Jesus knew something that much of the church has forgot. He's always known it, and it's this. We don't need people who aren't in church to stop what they're doing. We need them to get to an environment where they meet Jesus and hang out with him and let him change them into who they need to be. Because sometimes the church gets so caught up in what people are doing that we forget exactly why we're doing what we're supposed to be doing. And that's to introduce them to Jesus. Now, I want to tell you something this morning. This is a challenge message. Do I think our church does a pretty good job of accepting people and loving people? I absolutely do. I really do. In fact, I just, you know, I do. I look around at a lot of people and, you know, man, you even accept me for who I am. But here's the deal. And you hear me say this all the time. I never want to become a church that doesn't accept people. Therefore, I think it's important when we start talking about issues that way that we're challenged in specific ways. And this here is a big challenge. Jesus could have walked up to him and said, stop it. No more. Quit what you're doing. Quit being how you are. Quit this. Quit that. Stop doing this. Get rid of your attitude. Change how you dress. And then maybe I'll come and speak with you. And then maybe you can follow me. But Jesus doesn't do that. He walks up to this guy who is the outcast of all outcasts, doesn't say anything about changing his life, and he walks up and he says, follow me. Follow me. Remember when your kids were learning to walk? And you'd set them up, and they'd take a few steps, and then they would fall. Usually they would fall forward, you know, because their momentum was, you know. You know what's really cool, and I was thinking about this week. We'd sit them up, they'd take a few steps, and then they would fall. And then we would pick them up, and you know what? We wouldn't be concerned about them falling. We were celebrating the steps that they took. So we picked them up, and we set them on their feet, and we pushed them to take a few more. And our focus wasn't on the fall, unless they busted their head open. But even when they busted their head open, what did we do? We cleaned it up. We patched them up. We hugged them. We kissed on them. And then we set them on their feet to walk again. Think about that like the church. Because honestly, think about this. There's hope for us. There's hope for you. You fall, I fall. There are days that I fall. There are days that I crash and burn. But I'm so thankful to have a God that's full of grace and mercy. And to be a part of a church that is full of loving people that will set me up and help me set up, stand on my feet, and take some steps. There is hope for you. There is hope for you in Jesus. There is hope for you through Jesus in this church. We should be the same way. Now, some of you this morning, you need to take your next step. Some of you, you're walking. Some of you have walked for a long time, and maybe you've fallen down, and you're like, man, that really hurt. I just need to stay down for a while. Some of you have not taken that first step. It could be anything. But some of you this morning need to take a first step. You need to get, I'm just going to be real bold and honest, let go of the hopelessness in the situation. If you will give the hopelessness of your situation to a helpful God, he will take care of that. Get up and take your first step. If that next step is salvation, then you need to take it. If that next step this morning is baptism, And I've heard people say, well, I don't like to get up in front of people. It's you and Jesus and me. Forget everybody else that's sitting out here, okay, for just a moment. It could be the next step that pushes you towards farther into your relationship with God. It could be in serving. It could be joining a group. Getting involved with other people in relationships. And yes, you may feel hopeless and helpless, but Jesus needs, helps, and uses people just like that. There's hope for us through the church. Number two, a heart for us. A heart for us. Jesus has a heart for us. I mentioned being uncomfortable earlier. Have you ever been in an uncomfortable situation, especially in church? I'm about to tell you a story that would make a lot of people uncomfortable. It makes me uncomfortable telling it, but it's powerful. And I want you to listen to the story, and I want you to have an open mind, and I want you to have an open heart. And I also want you to stay with me to the end of service because it all kind of comes full circle when we get there. There was this big church. This is a true story, by the way. Big church in a big city and just lots of people, huge number of people. They actually had a live TV broadcast and, you know, every Sunday morning. And so had a lot of this stuff going on. And so there was this particular guy who had been coming to church for a long time. And he would always sit on the front row. And he had this buddy that he had been inviting for months. And this buddy was really, really rough. He was a rough guy. Just had a lot of problems and just, he was just rough. Always said no, always said no, always said no. Well, then finally one Sunday, he said yes. He said, yeah, I'll go. And so the next Sunday morning, of course, his buddy's all happy and excited and you know, guy shows up. True story. Guy shows up to church in a black t-shirt. On the front of this black t-shirt, it said, "Crazy Mother." Stay with me. He showed up. Not only did he show up to church, he sat on the front row. Knowing that not only the situation, that it was a live broadcast, and most people in the front rows got put on TV. He was on the front row. Some of the people were like, "We can't have this. It can't happen. The pastor, though, said, "Leave it alone. Just leave it alone." So the worship went on, and yeah, he loved the music, was jumping and shouting and all that kind of stuff. And by the way, he probably wore the shirt on purpose just to see exactly how people would treat him. But then somewhere in the middle of the message, something clicked. And at the end of that message, he gave his heart to Christ and then became one of the most radical Jesus followers that the church had ever seen. Let me ask you a bold question, because I have asked myself this question all week. What if that person walked in our church, and maybe it's not that shirt, maybe it's something totally different. Think about this, be real and honest. What would your reaction be? Be real. Most of us, and probably even myself included, at least the moment, I would love to think not. There would be no facial contact. It would be shirt contact. I asked the question. Would our heart, I'm sure we all do. Would we, stay with me. Would we be accepting and be concerned about who was in his heart more than what was on his shirt? Because this is what I believe. Now stay with me. Jesus would accept him just the way that he was. And if Jesus were to accept him that way, and I believe this, I'm going to show it to you here in just a second. And if Jesus would, then I should. Tough story? Yes. But watch this. Verse 10 says, while Jesus was having dinner at Matthew's house, now this is pretty big, many tax collectors and sinners came and ate with him and his disciples. Who did I say were the worst people of the worst just a second ago in the biblical day? There was two groups of people that were bad people, tax collectors and sinners. Who was he hanging out with? Tax collectors and sinners. The worst of the worst, the most outcast of the outcast, and here he was. It's just like Jesus threw a party, and he invited the outcast, the most sinful people, and he was willing to get uncomfortable for the sake of knowing people and them getting to know him. Big deal. Jesus liked people that were nothing like him. Now don't take that as, well, he didn't like other people. No, that's not what I'm saying. Jesus loves everybody, and he loves all people. But sometimes people, we as people, get caught up on everything that we want and what we think is right and what we think is wrong, that we lose the agenda of what Christ actually has. Jesus has a heart for all people. And if we as the church are truly going to be the hands and feet of Christ, then we have to be willing to get uncomfortable for the sake of somebody else meeting him. And there's reality in that. I mean, there really, really, really is. If people keep coming to church and hanging out with Jesus, they can't help but change. I believe that. Some people experience big, huge growth and big, huge change, and some people experience steps and steps at a time. But I believe that. But for them to change, they have to be in a place to meet Jesus. You hear people say, well, pastor, they listen to secular music. Well, pastor, they dress like this. Pastor, they look like this. Pastor, they just did this. Pastor, they were in the bar last night. Pastor, they had an affair. So what? That's why Jesus died. I've told this story before. I'll tell it again. This really made me think this week about a gentleman when I was in Lebanon, pastoring there at Lebanon First. And I got a phone call that, hey, pastor, would you go talk to this guy? And he's just really struggling. And So I went out and drove way out in the middle of nowhere, barely didn't find the place. And he was kind of a self-mechanic, had a garage, and I walked up and introduced myself, and I got out of the rig, and I didn't see nobody, and I said, hello, and then here comes the guy, and he's out from underneath the hood of this rig, and he's greasy from head to toe, so I go up, and I talk to the guy and introduce myself, and he's really cordial and really friendly and all this stuff, you know, so I spend some time with him there, and we get to talk for about 30 minutes or so, and then right out of the middle of the blue, he said, hey, Pastor, you want a beer? True story. I said, I think I'll pass today, So anyways, we talk. He goes and gets one. I don't say a word to him. We just keep talking, and I don't even look. I don't say about it, you know. And guys, this is just how I am. I've been judged, and I hate judging other people. So we spent some time together and shook his hand. I invited him to church. He said, maybe someday. So I left, and 3 or 4 days later, I went back to the garage, and I visited the man again, and same thing, you know. And he'd had a rough night the night before, I could tell, could see it, could smell it, and it was pretty rough. But, you know, we had a good hangout, never said a thing about it, didn't even think a thing about it, you know. And he kept working and thinking, and once again, I said, hey, dude, you know what? Hey, why don't you come see us? And after 3 or 4 times of this, finally he showed up one Sunday. And he came in, and he, just be honest, he'd been at the bar the night before. He looked and smelled like he'd been at the bar the night before. And he walked in, and he had his hat on, and he's one of them people that just wore a hat. You know, he was kind of balding, and just that's the way he was, and never went anywhere without a hat. So he come in, and I said hi to him, you know, hugged his neck, and, you know, that kind of pushed him back just a little bit. And so he comes in, and he said, man, where should I sit? I said, dude, sit wherever you want to. You know, and I told him, and we had this big balcony there, too, that people could sit in. Well, that's where he went and sat. And he sat in the farthest corner of the place that he could sit where nobody else would see him. There was a handful of people up there, and he just kind of sat by himself. After service, I had a guy come up to me, and this was a leader in the church. And I love him to death, still love him to death to this day. But he came up to me after church, and he said, Pastor Ron, what was that guy doing in our church? He smelled like alcohol. He wouldn't take his hat off. And he said, somebody needs to go talk to him. I said, yeah, somebody does. Somebody needs to go talk to him about Jesus. I said, you don't need to be going and talking to him about any of that other stuff. Because I said, honestly, if he would meet Jesus, the rest of that would take care of itself. A few weeks on, he kept coming, and you know, he would be there, and he kind of inched his way down from the top row of the balcony to the front row of the balcony, and then before too long, he came in, and one Sunday morning, he came in, and he said, Pastor Ron, I think I'm supposed to sit on the floor. I said, sit in the middle of it. He said, what about my hat? I said, what about it? He said, well, I don't know. I said, listen, you just go wherever you want to go. So he goes down and he sits on the floor in one of the seats and he has a good time. There's a few people, you know, that have embraced him. After that service, I'll never forget this as long as I live. After that service, he had somebody come up and absolutely rip him apart. And he never came back. And he wouldn't go back. Listen to me. And I'm going to share this in just a minute. I'm not trying to get ahead of myself. Jesus has a heart for all people. And his heart is to change people. Were there some things that man needed to change? Absolutely. Are there some things I need to change? Are there some things that you need to change? You bet. But I'm just going to be real bold as your pastor. If we allow somebody's hat to keep them out of heaven, we have done them a grave injustice. I love my church, and this is why I love my church, because Jesus has a heart for us, and I'm a part of a group of people that sees people's hearts for what they are. But it is a challenge to continue to be that way. Always. Because see this, and when I say this, please don't get disrespectful. I put little, you know, rabbit ears. Religious people have never understood the agenda of Christ. And whether it's then or now, honestly today, it's like they have their own system. This is what we believe. This is how we behave. And when you believe what we believe and behave the way we behave, then you can belong. This has never been the agenda of Jesus. It will never be the agenda of this church. Jesus has a heart for all people. For you, for me, for anyone, the outcast, the tax collector, and the person that has problems and issues. And it's up to our church. It's up to us to love our church in such a way that people see just exactly what the love of Christ is. Number three, almost done, I promise. A healing for us. A healing for us. In the church, Jesus provides healing for us. How many of you tough guys in here have hurt an ankle or a hand or a leg and it swells up like a basketball? And you go to the doctor and the doctor says, stay off of it for 2 weeks. Don't use it for 2 weeks. And we're like, yeah, it's all right. And so for the next 2 weeks, we're working out, we're going to work, we're doing all this stuff. And then a month later, we're back at the doctor with our ankle swollen up like a grapefruit. And we're like, "Doc, man, it just won't get better." "Well, have you stayed off of it?" "Well, no sympathy." I mean, seriously, no sympathy. And by the way, I'm one of those guys. That's just me. So listen to me. Healing begins when someone admits that they have a problem. Healing begins when someone admits they have a problem. Grab that. And if you are here today and you're still struggling with an issue, or you're still struggling with pain, or maybe even sin. Now, don't get me wrong. We all do, okay? We all do. But I'm just kind of a specific group here. Maybe it's a continual hopeless situation. It's a continuous this. And maybe you're just off to the stuff. I'm just saying it could be you. I don't know. Maybe it's time to face some reality and admit there's a problem. Because once you do, I can promise you that there's healing from Christ that follows. I know this personally in my life. I don't have a problem. I don't have a problem with this. I don't have a problem with that. I can handle it myself, I can do it myself, and I don't need anybody, especially Jesus, to help me. And with that kind of attitude, we stay stuck in the stuff. And it's just like we can't get out. Matthew chapter 12. Okay, listen to this. On hearing this, Jesus said, "It is not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick." Because see, back in verse 11, it says, when the Pharisees saw this, they asked the disciples, "Why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners?" I mean, seriously, you think about this. People get ridiculed all the time about stuff, and it kind of fits more to the other point that I had, you know, earlier just a little bit, you know. But the way that we look at things, and we see these people, we see these struggles, we know how Jesus wants us to look at them, but we get stuck on the external. And then, you know what, then we bypass the whole concept. Hey, there's supposed to be healing through the church, but there can't be healing through the church because we're not focused on healing their hearts and focused on Christ healing their life. We get focused on all of this other stuff. But listen, for those of us that are going through issues, and you that may be going through an issue, it may be time to step up and face the fact that yes, I've got an issue, and yes, I've got a problem. Jesus said, "It's not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick." I want you to grab this right here. Jesus just called them out. Right there, he just called them out. He told them, sitting at the table with all of these people, the worst two groups of his day, and said, "They're sick. I didn't come for those that think they're well. I came for those that know they're sick." He confronted their sin and he confronted their problems. And see, sometimes Christians and churches think that because people and churches reach out to people with problems that we don't confront sin, that we actually condone lifestyles and condone choices and condone that. And that is And yes, there are people in churches that do that, but I can promise you that this isn't one of them. It is wrong. It's the wrong way to think. It's the wrong way to act, and it's the wrong way to lead people in this life. And guess what? Matthew took this. You know why I know he took it? Because he continued to follow him. But you know why he took it? Because Jesus first began to build a relationship. Actually, Jesus first showed him grace before he spoke to him truth. Did you catch that? Jesus first showed him grace before he showed him truth. And sometimes the church likes to condemn people before they know their story or where they've been or what's going on in their life. And the church ends up saying this: there's healing for you, but first you've got to take care of your problems. Clean up, dress right, quit this, quit that, and then we'll talk. Jesus built a relationship and then he confronted his sickness. We talk about grace and truth. Actually, in John 1:14, it says this, and I just want to read, the Word became flesh, and that Jesus, okay, that's when he was coming, and made his dwelling among us. We have seen his glory, the glory of the one and the only Son who came from the Father, full of grace and truth. Both of those aspects. People and churches that abide completely only over here on the grace side and people over here that only abide on the truth side are far from the spectrum of both where we're supposed to be. Because if it's all truth, it becomes a condemning attitude. If it's all grace and everything over here, then we just pretty much let people do what they want to do and everything will be just fine. There has to be an element of both. Jesus gave us the examples of the element of both, showing grace and speaking truth. I know this. I get offended. And I know some of you get, I'm serious, I'm just being speaking. I get offended when I see things or hear things that Christians speak out against people or groups of people. It offends me. I'm sorry, it just does. You know, and some people say, well, maybe you're just convicted. No, I'm not. I'm offended. And the reason, because it doesn't mean I accept or condone their choices or their lifestyle or this group or whatever. It just means that I'm choosing to love them like Christ and show grace. And you know what? If I get the opportunity to speak truth, I'll speak it. Listen, sin is sin. I'm sorry, people, it just is. And I'm going to be really bold for just a minute, too. And there are things, you know, and there are mistakes in my life that I make and even sins in my life that I commit from time to time when I don't even think about it. Maybe I might think something or say something or have a bad attitude or do this or that or the other. But a lot of times I think we get it in our mind that, oh, Jesus' grace will take care of it and it'll cover all that. And you know what? It does. But that's the wrong attitude. And even as Christians, when we are faced with situations, if we see a person that is continually struggling with this particular issue or this particular sin, we are not loving them or doing them a justice if we don't give them the opportunity to experience healing in Christ. But can I tell you right now, instead of condemning first, show grace first, build a relationship with the person, accept this person for who they are, for where they are in their life, because that's just what Jesus did. He went to Matthew long, but he didn't go to Matthew and say, get rid of this and change this. He went to Matthew and said, follow me. And then after he began to build the relationship, he sat down at the table with these people and he said, you know what? What you're doing is wrong. Just this way or just that way. It's got to be both ways. There is healing for us in this church, but if you want to experience healing, if I want to have to experience healing, we have to admit that there's a problem. And Christians, we have to be bold enough in love, after grace, after relationship, to sit down with these individuals because, listen, we are not loving like Jesus if we don't try to help them. I don't believe that. And I love my church because of that. Look at the story of Jesus and the woman at the well in John 4. I mean, think about this. And I'm not going to read the whole story. Just kind of, you know, touch on a couple of things. And because he sits down. Listen, he goes to this place where he's not even really supposed to be at a time of day that he's really not even supposed to be there. This lady, I'm sorry. So he sits down and he asks her for a drink. He already knows about this lady. He knows her issues, knows her problems, knows her life and everything that's going on. But he sits down and says, ask for a drink. And he begins to talk with her and he begins to converse with her and almost build a relationship with her. And then after some things and after some talking and after investing into her life, you know, he said, and he told her, he said, go call your husband and come back. And she said, I have no husband. And he said, you're right. When you say you have no husband, the fact is you have five husbands and that man now have is not your husband. What you have just said is quite true. He confronted the issues that was going on in her life, but it wasn't done in a condemning way. It was done in a loving way. And it was done after he showed her grace just to sit there and talk with her. Look at the lady that was in the middle of the street about to be stoned. And this is just a few chapters over in the same book of the Bible. In the book of John, and you look at this lady, and you know, Jesus shows her grace. Because here are all these religious people, these Pharisees, they got rocks on their hands, and they're about ready to kill this poor lady, just sitting there in the middle of the street, and Jesus walks up, and what does he do? He shows her grace. He does not walk in the middle of that circle. He does not start condemning her for her actions. He does not start calling all of that stuff out. He walks up, he actually kneels down, spits and makes mud, draws in the dirt, and then he comes back up and he says, if you don't have no sin, start chucking. But then after he shows her grace, he says this. He says, woman, Jesus says this and asks her, he says, woman, where are they? Your accuser says, no one condemned you. No one, sir. She said, then neither do I. Jesus declared, go now and leave your life of sin. He still spoke truth. Listen, if you want healing today, you got to admit there's a problem, but you also have to be strong enough to realize that, you know what? You need some truth. I need some truth in my life. What about all the disciples? They weren't perfect when he called them. He saw them as they were. He showed them grace, and then he began to speak truth into their lives. How many times did we see Jesus speak truth to them? I was reading even this morning, just skimming through all the Gospels, the first chapters of the New Testament, and I could see where Jesus spoke truth to them disciples because he wanted them to grow. He wanted them to be closer to him. And they took it. Because he showed them grace and he built that relationship. I love my church. I want you to love our church. I do. I want that. And I want others to love our church. But for others to love the church, we have to love others like Jesus. And I believe that we do this. Do I believe it? Absolutely. But we can always grow more in this area. Finishing the story. In verse 13, Jesus says this, "But go and learn what this means. I desire mercy." Listen. "I desire mercy and not sacrifice. For I have not come to call the righteous, but the sinner." If a church doesn't have messed up people in it, then we're missing the agenda of Jesus. I love my church. I love our church, a church that ministers to kids. I love hearing loud music and kids crying and shouting and screaming. I love it. I love our church because we invest in our teenagers and we want to show them Christ. I love our church because we have people that come and they serve and they do all this stuff. And, you know, I love our church because it's full of addicts and the depressed and struggling marriages and people that struggle with their mouth and bad attitudes and the spouse that's had an affair. And, yes, even the one with the crazy T-shirt. I love our church because I love Jesus, and I love Jesus watching change people's lives. And we're not called to be safe. Church, we are not called to be safe. We are not called to be comfortable. We're called to be real. We're called to be honest. We're called to be loving. We're called to be compassionate. We're called to be bold. And we're called to be truthful. All for the sake of people knowing Jesus Christ and letting Him change their life. Change. Life change. Eternal change. Forever change. I want to tell you one more story this morning before we close. It's a story by a man by the name of Jason. True story. July 7th of this year. This man named Jason walks into a church called New Spring. Pastor Perry Noble preaches in South Carolina. Many of you have heard Perry's name before. He's a pretty prominent pastor, writes books, and good speaker. I follow him. He's crazy, and I like him. And I was listening to him the other day on one of his video podcast things, and he told this story of this guy named Jason, July 7th of this year. Drives into their parking lot on his big bike. He's decked out biker leather top to bottom, has the look, rough guy. I mean, honestly, looks like he would rather steal from you and just beat you to death than he would come in and build a relationship. But he comes in, and he comes in, and of course, nobody really knows what the guy was thinking other than the fact that I think he later shared that he'd been struggling with life, and he just kind of wanted to see if there was anything to this that might help him. And instead of coming in and facing these walls and facing all this ridicule and persecution, he came in and he faced people that loved him and accepted him regardless of what the outer appearance was, that truly had a concern for him to know Jesus. Well, he came in and he sat down in the service and he made it through the whole service. And at the end of the service, when Perry gave the response time, he accepted Christ as his personal Savior. God had spoke to him in a crazy way. And then after the service, they had a care team that they went to out, and they directed him to this care team, and he went back and he shared a little bit of his story, and he still looks rough, but they're still loving on him regardless of the look. Now remember this. And so they give him a Bible, they give him a Bible study on the book of John, and he signs up for baptism on July the 21st of this year. Excited. They're excited, he's excited, life changed, gonna show the world that he's changed, and I mean, what an awesome day. And so after service, the thing about this whole story is he never got baptized, because that day he left church and he got on his motorcycle, and on his way to his mama's, he was hit and killed. On July 7th, he was allowed to meet Jesus at New Spring. On that same day, because people of the way people accepted him, he was able to meet Jesus face to face. He was accepted as himself. He was loved as himself. And he met Jesus as himself. I've heard that and read that so many times this week, and I've still got chills from it. Think about this. Aren't you glad that people accept you for who you are? Really, aren't you glad? Do we all have problems? You betcha. Do you have them? I do. You do. If I need help, I would expect you to help me. If you need help, I would hope that you would expect me and anybody else to help you. I love our church. It is a church full of hope. It is a church with a heart for people. And it is a church that will help people heal. I believe that. So this morning, I want to ask you another question. What's your next step? Is your next step salvation and making Jesus your best friend? Is your next step baptism and taking that big step and coming back next week and taking the plunge? Is your next step joining a group? Is your next step, you know, confessing something to somebody? Is your next step dealing with the sin that's going on in your life? Is that your next step? Church, today, where are you at? As an individual, as a part of this church, where are you at? What if that person walks down into this church and walks in with that shirt on, or walks in with this attitude, or walks in smelling like this, or walks in looking like that? Where's our focus? And let's go even more. Remember I said earlier that the church is not what goes on inside, but just as much outside. What about the person that lives next to you, or the person that you see walking down the street? Do we already have this preconceived notion and idea that I'll be too uncomfortable if I reach out to them? That's just too much. That's just too much, God. I'll pray for them. I talked about that a couple weeks ago. Or are we bold enough and real enough to give somebody the opportunity to experience hope, heart, and healing through Jesus Christ? I check myself on this. And there are times that I fail. I think there's times that we all fail. I don't want this to be a selfish church. We need to be willing to be uncomfortable, willing to pull up to the table with people who aren't like me. Are we willing to show grace where grace is needed and to speak truth where truth is needed? All for the sake of somebody's life being changed by Jesus. Every head bowed and every eye closed. I know I went a little long this morning. I don't apologize for it because I believe God spoke. But in this time right now, nobody looking around, I want to talk about next steps for just a second, especially the next step in a relationship with Jesus. And if you're here today, and maybe you feel hopeless, helpless, maybe you feel outcast, and maybe you feel like somebody looks at you in a weird way, but you really are at a place in your life where you need to experience some healing, where you need to experience something different. And I'm going to challenge you this morning to not be concerned about what you know you think maybe somebody's thinking or what they've thought before, said before, but just right now it's just you and God for just a second, and because that's really the connection that's got to be made. And if that's you this morning and you know, you've never made this decision, you've never made this profession, or maybe you have, and maybe because of decisions and choices and all that stuff, maybe you've kind of got yourself into that feeling of hopelessness, but you know what? Jesus is right there. He knows just exactly how to deal with this. And if that's you and you know that that's a decision that you need to make today, would you just wave at me really quick and just say, that's me? Just got to make sure. Anybody here? All right, then here's the challenge that I have for us today. Church, I hope you love your church. If you're just visiting with us today, or maybe you're trying to figure out where you want to be, whatever, I hope you've at least got to the place this morning to where, you know, you've loved what God has spoke to you. I want to challenge you today to make our eyes the eyes of Christ, to make our heart His heart, to love people the way that He did, to have a desire to show hope, to show heart, and to give healing, to show grace, but to be bold enough to speak truth for the sake of someone knowing Jesus. Once again, do I think we do it well? Yes. Do I think we can do it better? Absolutely. I challenge you today for the next few moments. And I'm going to pray that God puts people's faces in your mind right now. I pray it for myself. Yeah, those faces may make you a little uncomfortable. But oh, for the sake of them knowing Jesus. God, today, thank you for your word and your challenge. I'm thankful for the church. Thankful for my church. But I'm thankful for the church. And Jesus, I know that you're the head of this church. And so, Jesus, I also know that if that's the case, then we're to follow you and your examples. It's just a challenge, God. I believe that these are awesome, awesome, awesome people with awesome hearts. We're just being real. And God, as you challenge us, may we be challenged, God, to leave our comfort, what we think, and to always follow what you think. God, may we experience life change through our obedience in that way. May we be a church that shows that there's hope to the hopeless. God, that there is a heart that is full of love for those that are broken. And God, that there is healing available through Jesus, His truth and His word. God, today challenge us. Speak to us in that way. Father, may we find the time, the place, and the effort at this point to worship You. And thank You for giving us that example. Jesus, we love You and we praise You in Your precious name.